Welcome to Ag Matters, covering the positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust.
Well, good morning and welcome to another edition of Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me in the studio this morning is the one and only, kind of infamous in this town, Don Burbrick. Welcome, Don, and thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah. Before we jump into my interview with you, I just want to remind folks quickly that tomorrow evening, on Thursday night, we are having the hoedown at Spring Creek Farm, and that is our celebration of the permanent protection of 80 acres of that farm. From 5:30 to 8:30 p.m., we will have live music, we will have free beer and cider, food for purchase from a variety of food trucks, and a petting zoo for the children. So it's going to be a really fun evening, rain or shine, and again, celebrating the fact that the Great Land Trust and the Farmland Trust work together with the DeWolf Kellogg Trust and Spring Creek Farm to permanently protect 80 acres there on Farm Loop Road. We're super excited about that. I know we'll see you there. So, Don, I wanted to have you on the show for a number of reasons. You're kind of legendary in the Palmer, Alaska agriculture community, and kind of there's been a big recent transition in your world. So let's start by telling me your connection to Alaska. How'd you get here and your connection to agriculture?
Well, I got here via the pipeline.
Okay.
My dad had a successful business in Dayton, Ohio, and the economy changed. The business kind of went down the tubes, and he had the opportunity to move up here and work on the pipeline. He'd been here in 1958 and fell in love with Alaska.
Okay.
And so it was really something he always wanted to do anyway. But in 1975, we came up, and I was in middle school.
Okay.
And
That's interesting. I always thought you were a lifer.
Here.
I thought you were born here.
No.
But no. I learned something new on every one of these shows I do.
And there's two Burbrick families in Palmer.
Sure.
So my uncle got here in the 50s.
Okay.
So most of his youngest kids were maybe a little bit younger than my oldest sibling, my sister. So
okay.
There's a long span of Burbrick children here in Palmer for a long time.
So. Absolutely.
But no, I came as a 13-year-old.
Okay. And was there any farming background in your family?
No. My dad was a total city guy.
Okay.
Grew up in, I think, the east side of Dayton. The Wright brothers played a part in our history, and I think that was the same side of town that their bike shop and stuff was on. So
okay.
I grew up with that history. But no, he was a city guy. Part of being a successful businessman, he bought a farm.
Oh,
so when
okay.
I was 10, I think we moved to a little hobby farm in North Dayton. And my older sister and I were just gung-ho animal nuts. And I got into the farming and stuff like that and the fence building. I was really into that. My other five brothers couldn't care less about that.
Oh, okay.
It was just chores. But my sister and I really got into it. So that's kind of where I got my interest.
Yeah.
Is
that why you ended up at K-State? Like, little taste of farming there, or?
No, that's a whole nother,
oh, okay. All
whole
right.
nother route there that
yeah.
happened. But I remember when I was a kid on that little farm, my dad decided it'd be good. We had a 2-acre soil patch, and he thought it'd be a good thing if we raised sweet corn and we put up a corn stand, and it'd be a good way for all my brothers and my sister to learn about business. And,
yeah.
And we were going to sell corn, but we apparently planted it too deep, and not a single blade of corn, not a single
oh, no.
seed germinated.
Nothing
so,
came up.
That was my dad's kind of farm background
okay.
right there.
Well, life lessons too, though. I mean,
yeah.
that happens sometimes in farming.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing comes to fruition.
No. So I ended up at K-State because while I was at Palmer High School, I met my wife, Deidre. And
right.
She was a Kansas girl, was born in Western Kansas. And she went off to Sterling College. She got a volleyball scholarship there.
Okay.
So she spent 2 years there. I took a year off, and then I went to Ohio State for 1 year.
Okay.
I always wanted to since
yeah.
I was a little kid.
Yeah.
So I did that. And then we got married and compromised and
met
went to Kansas
middle.
State.
Okay.
Which is a very good compromise because I really liked that school. And it was just a good fit for both of us.
Absolutely.
She was an accounting major. They were one
yep.
of the best accounting schools. And of course, their ag school is still top notch. So
yeah. And what was your degree in? Was it a teaching degree?
It was
ag education?
It's an ag. My degree is agriculture,
just general agriculture.
Yeah. And then I have an ag education certificate, I guess.
Okay. So, all right. Yeah. So when did you make your way back to Palmer and start teaching at Palmer High? I'm not good at math. When was it?
that was 1991.
Okay.
Graduated in 85, worked around a little bit, interviewed for that job. They hired a student at a student top there.
Okay.
So I waited until he moved on, and it opened up in, I think, 1991.
Okay.
And, it was 28 years of that.
Yeah.
It was great.
And it just went by in a flash, I'm sure.
It did. I mean, teaching agriculture is not like, I don't think it can be like anything else.
Sure,
You end up doing projects that, where you're on, you know, you're at kids' residences, working with their animals, working with their gardens, giving them advice on site. You meet their folks. The folks are so appreciative of what you're doing for their kids. So you get that whole relationship going with the kids and the parents. And it's just, you get a lot closer to those kids and you know them better.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, you're an actual advisor. That's one of my positions was the FFA advisor. And it's, you know, that's what you're doing. You're dishing out advice and helping kids. And a lot of those projects, those FFA projects are money makers.
Sure.
And some of those kids make
good money. Yeah.
I mean, I've talked to some FFA kids in the lower 48 that were making $30,000, you know, on their.
Dang.
Granted, their parents probably gave
them
100 acres.
Right.
30 head of cattle, but they were making big money, and it's financial.
Yeah.
And when finances are involved, you listen a lot
Absolutely.
More carefully.
Yeah.
So.
When there's that opportunity to make a buck.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Or lose a buck.
Yeah, right. So take us back to 1990, 1991. Were there ag education programs or teaching opportunities across the state, or was this a unique thing here at Palmer?
No, it wasn't unique in Palmer. And when I was in high school, my junior year, they started the ag program in Palmer at the same time. So this was a time when oil money was flowing.
Flush.
I think, what was oil? $36 a barrel.
Right.
But the pipeline was full.
Full, yeah.
And there was money to be spent. And a lot of places in the bush were starting ag programs.
Okay.
And there was I think her name was Patricia Holloway. She was at the State Department. Huge promoter of ag education, just saw that the leadership potential for FFA, the skill set that the kids in the villages could learn, and she pushed it. And at that point, my junior, senior year, we had 26 programs around the state.
Wow.
Over half of them were in the bush.
That's incredible.
Ruby, and I remember Ruby was one. I can't even remember them all now.
But that's a lot, 26 FFA programs.
Yeah. And by the time I got into teaching, it had dropped down to about maybe 12.
Yeah.
And eventually we got down to, I think, 6.
Right.
And then about, probably right around, probably 1998 or somewhere around in there, 2000, Al Poindexter, who was the FFA, he's talking about legendary.
Yeah.
He was my mentor in teaching and I can't say enough good things about Al, but he was the ag teacher in Homer at that time, getting his master's degree, and he did a project where he would he created a marine biology contest for our state convention.
Right.
And it was marine technology. That can be patching a net, talking on the radio, and then the biology piece, identifying fish and all that, and all the animals in the ocean. So it was a really incredibly neat,
valuable skills for Alaskan kids to have.
Oh, yeah, and it fits so many places. Well, instantly within a year, I mean, that's pretty instant as, you know, education programs go. We added like 12 new programs, all coastal towns. We had Kodiak and Cordova and Unalaska.
You know,
Ketchikan signed up. And then some of these programs, I think Ketchikan owned their own longliner. They were fishing for halibut. Unalaska had their own hatchery.
Oh, wow.
A school hatchery. I mean, and all these people that came together at that point were just really neat, really good people. And the program grew and it took off until one by one those people retired and those programs shut down. And,
you lose your champions.
We went back down to five or six chapters. And that kind of was the norm for a while. And then Bill Stoltz helped us get some funding for a state advisor. So
right.
About 5-6 years ago,
yep.
we hired Kevin Fox to be our state advisor, first paid state advisor we ever had. Everything before that was a volunteer. I was actually the state advisor like my third year teaching, which
oh my
was
gosh, yeah.
a complete joke because you just learn how to teach and
yeah.
do that on the side. So, but having a full-time paid state advisor
absolutely.
Was huge, and he's been growing the program slowly and adding more chapters. And
yeah, we've had him and a few of the state officers on the show over the course of the last year a couple of times, and they're doing great things.
Oh, yeah. The state officers he's training are
yeah,
fantastic.
They're incredible.
Every year I'm just amazed yeah. how good they do.
Quick interruption to remind folks that this is Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me in the studio this morning is Don Burbrick, longtime Palmer ag education teacher, FFA advisor. What other hats did you wear over there, Don?
I was a soccer coach for a
oh,
while.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That was fun.
Yeah. I want to jump kind of into some of the details because my high school, we didn't have FFA, and we certainly didn't have ag education as part of our curriculum. I was a 4-H member for 9 years, and that was a huge part of my life. But I'm just real curious about some of the classroom work that actually goes on in that ag education program. Like, what are some of the classes that are offered to kids or that over the course of your many years, almost 3 decades, what were some yeah. of your favorite classes or the ones that really stick out?
Right. So I'd say my favorites were always in plant science and
okay.
horticulture.
Yeah.
And I kind of came to horticulture late in my college training and I don't know. I just really found a niche there that I liked. But landscaping was especially
okay.
fun for me to
yeah.
teach. I had a landscaping business prior to teaching, so I had some practical experience in that. And I've always enjoyed art from far back as I can remember. I've worked with some art stuff. So landscaping was just a great outlet for the
sure.
creative side
yeah.
plus the business side. And my dad was an entrepreneur pretty much his whole life except for 2 years on the North Slope.
Okay.
So I always had a kind of interest in business, entrepreneurship. So landscaping was always that. My daughter, of course, went on
yeah.
to do – she is a landscape architect.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of nice to
yeah.
see that happen.
See that carry forward, yeah.
But at Palmer High, we offer – like 4 main areas. We have horticulture, we have plant science, we have natural resource management, and then we also have a small ag mechanics piece.
Okay.
And that would include like small engine repair, welding, ag construction, things like that.
Yeah.
So under each one of those, then we have in animal science, we have an introductory course, and then we have an advanced course, which is companion animals.
Okay.
And then in horticulture, we have intro, and
yep.
then we have greenhouse production or greenhouse management, and then off and on we offer landscape design.
Okay.
In ag mechanics, we have small engines and welding, and in natural resource management, we do an intro.
Yeah.
There's a pattern.
Yeah,
there.
Absolutely.
And then we have a class in forestry.
Okay.
And now, the coolest thing,
yeah.
about me retiring is that they were able to hire 2 people to take
right?
this ag program on.
That's incredible.
Just, yeah, it's just things happen. I say a perfect storm where we have a phenomenal principal in Paul Reed that's backing that program.
Absolutely.
We have a great director of career tech ed at the district, Trish Suggs. And then
you had 2 incredible candidates.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah.
When the interviews were done, they said, we don't know what to do. We want to hire both of them.
Yeah.
I said, well, we all laughed. Oh, that would be great.
Right.
And then things worked out where they could do that. So they're expanding the program.
That's giving me goosebumps, actually,
yeah.
to think about that they're expanding the ag education program
yeah.
at Palmer High.
And that's unheard of in Alaska.
No, absolutely.
There's 2, 3, even 4 person programs in Lower 48, but for a program in Alaska to have 2, it's just
yeah.
Unprecedented. It's exciting for me. I couldn't ask for a better outcome.
Absolutely. So all those courses that you mentioned, though, you're the teacher. You're teaching all those different
yeah.
things.
Okay.
And where does that curriculum come from? Like your head, or you like?
When I first started, it was existing.
Yeah.
You know, you just kind of take over what's there, and then you kind of look at the way that we're trained at the college level is it's like you set up an advisory committee, and that's people from industry, people from the community, I had a lot of people from the university.
Okay.
And we look at what does the community need? And that's key, because if you just say, oh, I want to teach this or I want to teach that.
Sure.
That's great for you, but,
yeah,
you know, where's it go?
How's it
going to
be useful after the fact?
So we really look at the community, what they could use. For years, we did livestock judging.
Well, yeah.
I think there's about 100 livestock judges in the whole United States. It's
right.
Like, why do we do that anymore? There's not even very much livestock.
Although the state fair has to bring up a judge from outside every year.
Yeah,
so.
And we don't do livestock judging now for the fact that we need to judge livestock. It's a great skill at teaching oral communication.
Absolutely.
For thinking on your feet and then evaluating things. So
yeah,
it's really a training.
A life skill, too.
You're
learning.
And it's fun. It's a fun way to learn that stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, I was never great at memorizing poems and speeches and play parts. I hated that. But I could memorize all the parts of an animal with these. I don't know. I have a knack for that. So it kind of lets, you know, memorization is an important skill.
Absolutely.
Whether you like it or not. So that was good. It's good for that. So.
Yeah. So unfair question, because you might not know, but as Cody and Corinne, right? Those are our two new teachers over there at Palmer High. Do you know at all about their plans for expansion? Are they going to continue to offer the courses that you've been offering, or what's going on?
Well,
and I guess I should have them on the show at some point and we can talk about
it. That'd be great.
I got to get Al Poindexter on the show, too. That would be a fun
fantastic.
Interview. Yeah, he's doing
great.
It'd
be fun to hear Al talk about Palmer High, because he's always been a big supporter of our program.
Yeah.
We've always partnered on different things when we could. So I know that they're going to expand the welding program because that was the program that allowed us to add a second teacher.
Okay.
Our welding instructor resigned and it opened that up. So it was a case where, once again, Paul Reed could say, this is what I want. I think we can use this. And
serendipitous.
He filled the position with an ag teacher.
That's which incredible.
We'll let ag expand.
Yeah.
It's really... Cody Buse is coming in from the Southeast, where he ran several school greenhouses.
Right.
And they were producing food for the schools.
Yeah.
He's been tasked with making our school greenhouse and our fields and stuff up there produce food for the school.
Oh,
and,
my word.
And eventually for the whole community, you know, for the community.
It.
It's not necessarily about making a bunch of money doing that, but just making that. The whole learning process, you know, legit and real. So I know that, we got new hydroponic units installed last year. We've got a great greenhouse. We got some outdoor space. So part of what he's going to do is to try to, you know, get the students producing food and at least get it into the cafeteria.
Yeah.
And healthy food. It's
that's incredible.
It's a priority for Mr. Reed, so that's good.
Well, it ought to be a priority for the school district, because the school district sits in the most productive vegetable-producing, you know, I'm not going to get on my bandwagon here, but for a lot of years at the Division of Ag, this was something that we were focused on and trying really hard. And I think oftentimes it just takes the right person in a key position to say yes.
Yeah.
Let's give it a try.
You're so right.
Yeah.
Arthur Keyes always said that. He goes, that's a great idea, Don, but you got to find the right person before it'll work. So I heard that from him many times.
Yep.
Corinne's specialty, she comes from a really strong environmental science background.
Mm-hmm.
Al coached a team that she was kind of, she was probably the team captain, if you will. But they were able to go to the national competition and take second place. That's unheard of in Alaska also. They also went to an international competition in environmental science, the Canon Envirothon, and they took 15th overall. So those kind of achievements were great. She also ran for national officer.
She did.
She's two-time state officer. So she's gonna bring a really strong FFA component, keep that going. When the interviews were done, it was like, if they could take both of those, and because one, you know, Cody's weaknesses were Corinne's strength, and Corinne's weaknesses were Cody's strength, so it was just, a really good combination there.
Well, I remember I couldn't believe it. You know, when we knew that you were going to retire, there was a number of us in the ag community that were concerned about how that position would be filled,
or if it would be filled.
Traditionally,
that, that's a perfect time to drop
cut a
program,
position, save some money.
So,
yes.
Yeah, I was worried about that too.
Yeah, and so when we knew obviously that both Corinne and Cody were interested in the position, and I just remember when someone finally mentioned to me that they were going to hire them both, and I thought, what in the how does this happen? You know, it was just it couldn't be better. Yeah.
And I'm a little speechless now because when Paul Reed told me that, I couldn't even answer him then.
Yeah. What? Yeah, it's huge. It's incredible. Yeah, well, another interruption and reminder to folks that this is Ag Matters Radio, and joining me in the studio this morning is Don Burbrick, former ag education teacher at, I almost said Pacific. My high school is Pacific High School, at Palmer High School, and longtime FFA advisor, et cetera, et cetera. So, Don, in our kind of third and final segment here, tell me about what's next.
What's next?
Yeah, let's talk about what you've been doing and on the side and what's going to fill up more of your time now.
Yeah, everybody's asking me how it feels to be retired, and it's like,
what?
It feels just like another really busy summer farming. I started a farm 6 years ago when I first thought about retiring. The idea was that by now the plants would be fruiting and I'd have some income right away coming in. It's a mistake looking back now, but I started making jams and jellies and syrups and candy. And I didn't want to be that busy back then, but I did it anyway. So now I'm really busy doing all that stuff. There's just a couple acres of strawberries and currants and apples, cherries, rhubarb, all kinds of miscellaneous. So one can make lots of different jams and jellies.
Absolutely.
But that's keeping me really busy.
That farm name is Juice, Jelly, and Jam,
Juice,
right?
Juice, Jelly, and Jam, which is a funny name for a farm. So we're playing with new names like JJ and J Farm.
Oh, okay. All right.
I don't know.
Well, it's catchy, Juice, Jelly, and Jam. I mean, and you know those things like that with names where people go, that's a farm name? Hey, they just thought about it twice. They've thought about it again, you know. Yeah, from a marketing perspective.
Roger Vanderwill calls it Jamland. That has potential, I guess.
Jamland. I like it. So if folks haven't had the pleasure of trying your products yet, where can they get them?
Most of our products are sold at South Anchorage Farmers Market. Yep. But we do set up a tent at the field. We're out on Outer Springer Loop by Meyer Lake.
Okay.
Right at the Meyer Lake public entrance. And right now we're just working on trying to get open on a Friday.
Okay.
And then as more and more berries ripen, we'll keep it open more and more and more. So this year's been really slow for strawberries to come on. Everything else is pretty normal. Currants are coming along normal. Yields look good. I lost most of my cherries to voles. They girdled my trees and set them back.
What term did you use? They did what to your trees?
Girdled. They
girdled.
Ate all the bark around the tree. So I lost where there's usually 8 stems coming out of the ground, 8 trunks, if you will.
Okay.
There's one now.
So
that's a pretty big setback. But
how are you going to mitigate that next year? What's your plan?
So
just in case listeners also have that problem, how do you keep the voles out?
If you have just a few trees, the easiest way is just to stomp the snow around when we get a deep snow. Stomp the snow. As the voles come under the snow and they hit that hard snow, they go around their tree.
Okay.
Another thing I'm going to do, which I didn't do last year, is I'm going to remove all the debris from under the tree.
Sure.
So I left grass and leaves under there. I made the perfect habitat.
Perfect little nest for them.
Yeah, they moved in the nest and they're like, okay.
Oh, look, there's food here too.
Yeah. We don't have to go out tonight.
Yeah.
So that didn't help. So I'm going to get it right down to bare earth around the trees. And that should help. I want to make some traps that I can try to lower the population with traps.
Yeah.
So
you need a field cat.
You know, and people tell me that they don't have a problem with shrews if they have a cat.
Yeah.
So I need about 6 of them.
Yeah.
How many per acre? What's the stocking rate for cats?
I don't know. If you have the right kind of cat, which I can't remember where we got our last kittens, but they were somebody's barn cats, and they would bring us foals daily, multiple foals daily. So if you have a hunter,
Yeah.
I guess, how are you going to keep them in the field? But you can worry about all that.
Yeah. Need a cat fence.
Yeah.
Forget moose. Need a cat fence.
Excuse me. So Juice, Jelly, and Jam at South Anchorage Farmers Market.
Yeah.
You sell fresh berries or just the value-added products?
We sell fresh. We sell frozen. We sell, of course, processed into jams and jellies. We sell about a third of our stuff fresh.
Okay.
Last year, we went over 1,000 pounds on red currants.
Wow.
And so, which is...
That's a lot of picking.
I can't imagine. Every year I go, there's no way that could double, but that's doubling from the year before. It's been doubling every year, and it's just at some point I know it's going to even out, but birds really hit the currants this year, so I don't know if we're going to go over 1,000 pounds this year, but... So I was selling about 80 pounds a week fresh at the market.
Okay.
And they're really popular. We sell them on the stem. So
yeah. They're beautiful.
The customers don't seem to mind doing the work. The work. So we sell them on the stem fresh. And then I have some other competitors that make jelly, and they like to buy in bulk.
Sure.
So we sell 10-pound bags of them to competitors.
Yeah.
So the neat thing about the jelly making world is we're all good friends.
Yeah.
It's the best competitors to have.
Yeah.
So we about a third go into jams and jellies. When I first started planting currants, my neighbor, he came over and he's like, "What are you gonna do with all these berries? I have 200 plants," and I said, "I have no idea. I just like growing currants." That's the absolute worst thing a farmer should do. You should have a market first. I mean, Ben Vanderwills told me this 20 times.
That's true.
But I came up with a meat marinade that's currants and onions and some vinegar and spices, and it's been a big hit.
Oh, okay.
And the South Anchorage crowd, they buy it by the case, especially at the end of the season.
Oh, okay.
Ship it out to all their kids, I think, is what I hear. So
I haven't tried the marinade yet. I'll have to get my hands on some of that. Is it for red meat or fish or whatever you want to put it on?
We love it on pork and chicken.
Okay.
That's great. But I get reports that it's great on fish.
Yeah.
My brother puts it on salad.
Hey.
So I don't know. It's kind of like... It's not hot and spicy. I call it Christmas spices. It's like cloves and allspice, stuff like that. So,
Have to try it.
It's
so
zingy.
Yeah. So Don, use your crystal ball, and what is this? What does this all look like in 5 years? What is this? Are you where you're hoping to be, or are you going to grow it a little bit?
It changes constantly.
Sure.
It's kind of an evolving business model. Trying to make jams and farm and keeping up with remodeling jobs at my house.
Sure.
It's
the honey-do
list.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like camping and canoeing and all that too. So I'm kind of thinking toward just farming, harvesting, freezing, selling fresh stuff like that.
Yeah.
And not start with the jams and jellies until after the growing season.
Okay.
Start making up a bunch then and hit the Christmas markets.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Thinking that. We make a really good candy.
Those little apple bites and the little ginger. Yeah,
those are real popular.
They are. They're
great,
really good.
Gift sizes.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the way I'm leaning right now, just to kind of even out the workload. And I'm excited to see what harvest looks like without having to work 8 hours.
Right.
Come home and harvest for 2 hours.
So. My goodness.
And I like harvesting. It's kind of fun. So we'll see.
Yeah. All right. Well, good luck, and we'll stay tuned and checked in with what you're doing. Thanks so much, Don, for joining me this morning on Ag Matters Radio. It's been a pleasure learning a little bit more about your background. And
I always enjoy coming in.
Yeah. Congratulations on your retirement.
Thanks.
All right.
You've been listening to Ag Matters, covering positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust. Ag Matters is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. For more information about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.